Morning to each of you and greetings in the name of Jesus. It's good to see everyone gathered together and visitors as well. Welcome you to be here and worship with us.
As I thought about preaching this Sunday, I think it was about the end of last week and beginning of this week, you start praying, "Dear God, what you want me to preach?" It wasn't like I had an agenda this time. And just praying about what do you want me to preach on? What should I preach on this coming Sunday? Because, you know, eventually 10:45 rolls around and you got to have something to say, right? So you start praying early. And the Lord brought an experience into my life this week that I've thought about a lot this week. And I'd met with somewhere between an acquaintance and a good friend. I'm not sure what you call that, but good friend is someone you know well. I know him well, but not necessarily a good friend, but more than acquaintance, so if you get the picture. And I'd met him on a job site and hadn't seen him for a while, and we were talking, and I'd known that there had been they've had some difficult experiences in life, and I knew that his one son was not doing well, and so I said, how's it going? You know, how are things going there? And I listened to him talk for quite a while and the difficulties that he was facing and with his son. And I said, I'll definitely keep praying for him. And he said, "Well, pray for me too." He said, "I just got a lot of things right now." He said, "I just, don't know what to do with." He said, "I can't remember how it all went, but he said, I tell you, I just got so much hatred in my heart." He said, "How do you not hate?" And my mouth felt like it dropped open. I wasn't sure. And he said, "I know what's right. I know what the Bible teaches." But he said, "I'm telling you, I'm not making it to glory. I'm not making it to heaven." He said, "I got so much hatred in my heart, things that happened in the past." And he went on to keep talking. And I said, "Well," I said his name. I said, "I really want you to be able to make it to glory." And he just broke down and cried. And I said, "Well, can I pray for you?" And I prayed for him. And I thought a lot about the conversation in the past week. How do you not hate? How do you not grow bitter? And so I left saddened that the devil had another person in the grasp of bitterness. And I thought as well about a thistle that we had back in Edenville, and I think I used this illustration here before at another subject. But I thought of that thistle because the Bible talks about a root. And this thistle, I think if I remember correctly, it seemed like a bunch of little ones, and I tried all kinds of things. I'd chop it off. I sprayed Roundup on it. I sprayed concentrated Roundup on it. I dumped gas on it. I dug it up and I dug to try to find the very end of the root. And sometimes you think, "Ha ha, I got you this time," but it always came back. And someday I want to talk to Amos and say, "Is that thistle still there?" As far as I know, it still was when I left. But somewhere that thistle developed a significant root system that I just was not able to kick it. I just couldn't. You know, as I look at life now, and as I am 41, and I feel like I'm looking at middle age, kind of just right in the middle, I'm looking at middle age life. And as I look at some of the temptations and some of the what I believe are snares of this age. You know, we have our accountability groups, and we talk a lot about moral purity, and I think that's good. That's a good thing to have accountability with. But I'm not sure that for some people that's really where the devil's going to take them down. And as I thought a lot about Curtis's comment the other Sunday about wealth. And you know, I'm gonna suggest that there are several snares that middle-aged people face. One is wealth or the drive for wealth. And I've contemplated different times during revival meetings of preaching on this subject. there have been places I have went for meetings, and one time I went to a place I was supposed to stay, and I drove past the place. I said it simply could not be the place that I was supposed to go to. I mean, but it was. And, you know, somehow I think that if I got up there and preached on wealth, the smiles would disappear. That pressure's there. I don't, just say it how you want. And so I've thought a lot about that. That once you get middle age, they maybe face a temptation on power. There's a temptation on power and prestige. And there's a quote that goes like this. Some have attributed to Abraham Lincoln. I'm not sure if it's that actually facts or not. He said, "Nearly all men can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man's character, give him power." And that can be true for some men. You give them power and they will abuse it. And thirdly, I have another one, and that is bitterness. You know, bitterness has taken way too many people down. And the problem is, you see, you can be, may I say, a member of the church, and you may have this bitterness. This man I was talking about, as far as I know, he's a member of the church. But bitterness, and in the grasp of Satan. You know, bitterness comes from so many different things. Bitterness can come from chastisement from God. Bitterness can come because of unchangeable circumstances that God allowed into our life. And I think of in the book of Ruth, when Naomi came back, she said, "Don't call me Naomi, call me Mara," which is bitter. He said, "The Almighty has dealt bitterly with me." You see, in the middle age of life, and life changed some circumstances. You know, I had to think of them in the wedding yesterday. You know, it was easy to sing the songs. We have this moment to hold in our hands. We sing songs about God leading. It's easy to sing on those days, isn't it? But you know what? You get married, you get into life, and life throws you the curveballs, and life throws you different things. And you know, you don't even have to be at middle age. And what I'm focusing, I said middle age, but some of these roots start in young age. So if you're here and you're young this morning, you're not excluded, okay? In fact, it's probably more important in your age than any other age. And there's less hope when we get older and older and steeped in our sins, and the roots are deep. And so when you're young, take care of these things quick in life. Bitterness can come from offenses of others. Bitterness comes from allowing sin in our life. Bitterness comes from thinking we are the only ones. Thinking of Elijah. I think he was on that discouragement, bitterness line, and he was hanging there for a little bit. Bitterness comes when our nose is to the grindstone all the time. There's no relief in sight. Bitterness comes from comparing our circumstances with others and believing that God is unfair. And probably you can add to the list of things that create bitterness in your own life, could create bitterness. But I've pondered a while the question that I was asked, how do you not hate? And so I had time to swallow and try to get my mind together, and I said, well, you know, I know what it's like to struggle with that. And I said, most times when I struggle with unforgiveness or bitterness, it's because there is someone or something that I'm trying to control. I said, you just need to quit doing it. Whatever it is you're trying to control, you just need to let it go. It don't matter. It isn't that important. And he come back with, well, you say it's me that's trying to control. It's her that's trying to control. I didn't say anything. But I went away from there sad, because that's just the path that it takes. That's kind of the path of bitterness. And so, as I pondered this subject of what other answer I could have given, should have given, and I don't know that he was asking for a sermon, I pondered that question. What do you do? Is there something more than we just talked about? And so I just want to preach an expository message from Hebrews 12. We're not going to go anywhere else. We're just going to stay right in Hebrews chapter 12. And obviously I went here because of the verses that right in the middle that says, follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. Looking diligently, lest any man fail the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. And there's those verses right in the middle. And so as I contemplated this passage, I thought, well, maybe we can learn something from just looking at Hebrews chapter 12. So Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds. Ye have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin. Ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if ye are without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are ye bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh which corrupted us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Wherefore, lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it rather be healed. Follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. Looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. Lest there be any fornicator or profane person, as Esau, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright. For you know how that afterward, when he would have inherited the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no place of repentance, though he sought it carefully with tears. For you are not come unto the mount that might be touched, and that burned with fire, nor unto blackness and darkness and tempest. And the sound of a trumpet and the voice of words, which voice they had heard and entreated that the word should not be spoken to them any more. For they could not endure that which was commanded, and if so much as a beast touched the mountain, it shall be stoned, or thrust through with a dart. And so terrible was the sight that Moses said, I exceedingly fear and quake. But ye are not come unto Mount Zion, but unto the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly of the church of the firstborn, which are written in heaven, and to God the judge of all, and the spirits of just men made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling, that speaketh better things than that of Abel. See that ye refuse not him that speaketh, for if they escape not who refused him that spake on earth, much more shall not we escape if we turn away from him that speaketh from heaven. Whose voice then shook the earth, but now he hath promised, saying, yet once more I shake not the earth only, but also heaven. And this word, yet once more, signifieth the removing of those things that are shaken, as of things that are made, that those things which cannot be shaken may remain. Wherefore, we receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved, let us have grace, whereby we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear, for our God is a consuming fire. Let's go back to the beginning of the passage. One of the things that's hard for me to sometimes grasp is the race is on. It used to be that you always would, in younger years, well, you know, it's always, the older ones were always there. The middle-aged people, they were always there. They were the ones that were still leading out. They were the ones taking charge. They were the ones making things happen. Today, we are in the race. The race is on. We are the ones in the arena of life. We are the ones, it's now our responsibility. What are we going to do with responsibilities we have? What are we going to do with the things that God has placed into our life? The race is on. It's no longer us being young, looking back and say, well, you know, that's their problem. Let them take care of it. The race is on. It's you and I in the race today. And you know, eventually, older ones will pass off and younger ones will be in the middle of the race. But for you and I today, we are in the race. We are at different stages of it, but we are now there. It is now our. We are not the cloud of witnesses. We are in the race today. Number one, this race requires a laying aside of weight. Let us lay aside the weight and the sin which does so easily beset us. One of the things that I have learned in hanging doors that, of course, we always wear a tool belt with shoulder straps because we do carry a fair amount of tools in there. One of the things I do is when I get to the job, I get ready to start the job, and I think, okay, what tools do I need for the next 2 or 3 hours? Because I can fit all the tools that I have in there. But one of the things that you find, if you stick them all in there, you know, after 8-10 hours, you feel it, okay? And it's just amazing that when you look back, you say, okay, I'm not wiring any operators now, so my strippers and my crimpers and those tools that I use for electrical, they stay in the truck. And, well, I think I only need 2 vice grips now. I'll keep the one in here, and you start eliminating some of those tools, and it might only be 4 tools. But I'm telling you, I can feel the difference in weight. And especially after 8-10 hours, you feel the difference. Now, sometimes then, when you need the other set of tools, it's best just to go get them and work with them. You see, I know that people talk about you can build yourself up, and I think in many ways I have. But slice the pie how you want. Unneeded weight, extra weight, will wear you out to the end of the day. Weight that's not needed. Now here in this chapter, he's using the analogy of a runner. Now, a runner's not even putting any tools in his tool belt, okay? The runner's worried about, do they have the right kind of sneakers? Or how much weight are they? Is it the right kind of clothes? And how much weight are they? Because any extra weight, by the time you get toward the finish mark, could make the difference between making it or not. Because that little bit of extra weight, it just slowly wears you out. So that's the analogy. And I believe that many times the root of bitterness, the start of it, does not start out as a major weight. You see, it starts small, and it grows, and it grows. You know, it starts with a disappointment, which can be a weight. It starts, then that adds extra heartache, and maybe whatever happened adds extra work to your load. And add to that a sinful, angry thoughts. And, you know, or else, you know, God could have prevented this from happening. Why didn't God prevent this? If this person were out of my way, and on the list goes, you see, finally, you're running a race with a tool belt that's never been meant to run with. And, you know, life goes on, and the list only gets longer. Life is unfair. God is unfair. People are ridiculous. And those weights keep you, will keep us from reaching the finish line. Number two, this race is run with patience. It says, let us run with patience the race that is set before us. I don't know how patience works in a running race. I'm not quite sure. You see, every analogy breaks down, right? I think that's maybe one area where the race, if you're in a if you and another person are running a race, I'm not sure where that comes in, but I know where it comes in the spiritual race, right? It makes a lot of sense to me. Here is part of the answer, I feel like, to this root of bitterness that we sometimes struggle with. It's part of the answer. Let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Very few times do difficulties, discipline brought into our life, chastisement, however you want to use some of the words we will look at here later, Very few times do we immediately understand exactly why it came into our life, right? Very few times do we immediately, oh, yep, makes complete sense. Nah, not really. Mostly not how it works. Let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Am I willing to just give God some time to work out the details? You see, part of the reason we need to run this race with patience is because God is in this race. He wants us to win. But part of this race is also allowing God, giving Him His time to work. And I think that some of these things I might bring up are small. I'm just thinking of some of my own personal struggles in the last year or so. You know, over change, you have to change a business name. Now, a lot of you probably think that's just a small thing. And in many ways, it was. There's many days I don't even think about it anymore. And, you know, but there were days when it first came about that, you know, I was kind of angry at Dan Apple. You know, just what a dummy. Who do you think he is? All this extra work. And I remember the one. We had changed it to a DBA, and then Dan said, well, that's not enough. You need to change it to State Corporation Commission. I remember at that point calling an attorney I was recommended to call, and because I'd already changed my public face. And he says, what's the big deal? He says, you've already did the hardest part. Just do the paperwork and finish it. Yeah. And so, you know, there's a couple points kind of running together. I think I'm going to finish that story a little later, okay, just because it goes with another point. What's the big deal? Let us run with patience a race that is set before us. And do we realize sometimes that from other people's perspective, some of the things that we think are a big deal to us are not actually that big of a deal? And I think his exact words were, what's the big deal? I think, if I remember correctly, that's what it was. This person I was talking to at the beginning of last week, what he was upset about that day was inheritance money, okay? And I look at that and I say, what's the big deal? Because, you know, I don't know that I would ever get any inheritance money. I don't think there's much on my parents' part and there's not much on my wife's parents' part. And so it's easy for me to look at him and say, well, what's the big deal? Because to me it's a little thing. And you know, I really believe sometimes that there's been a whole lot more souls damned to hell through inheritance money than if the parents would just say, you know what, any access goes to missions when I pass away. I would encourage you to think about that. Could you consider that? And you see, thinking about wealth, you know, sometimes when you start talking like this is when smiles disappear because it touches our pocketbook. Let us run with patience the race that is set before us. You see, sometimes I just need to give time. I just need to let God work out some details. I need to give it time to, you know, not make a big deal right away over something. I know that's easier said than done because we live in the flesh, right? But I'm trying to take an expository look at what is being taught here in Hebrews chapter 12 to help us with this struggle. And if we can help one person in this congregation not get to the root of bitterness, not be taken away. I think it's one of the devil's schemes to take us away, maybe later in life, by allowing roots of bitterness to go in and get a hold of us. Let us run the race with patience. And it's going to mean sometimes letting God work out the situation. Number three, this race is run with chastisement and correction from God. Verses 4 through, let's see, well, it continues on. We read them, so I'm not going to read them all again. It is run with chastisement and correction from God. Chasing is tutorage, is education or training by, and it also means disciplinary action, disciplinary correction, rather. And so chastisement means that God is sometimes training you. He's encouraging you. He's teaching you, but also means that he sometimes disciplines us. The race is run with chastisement and correction from God. Do you notice the wording in this chapter here? What this chapter is saying in plain, simple language is just expect that when you go through life, you're gonna have to get trained, you're gonna have to get corrected, you're gonna have to get disciplined by God. And actually he's saying, if this isn't happening, there's something wrong with you. Is that actually how we think? We don't want to think that way. But you see, isn't that sometimes why the root of bitterness gets a root in our life? Is because we don't realize sometimes that the reality of it all is this is God training us. This is God trying to point us in the right direction. This is God trying to steer our life where he wants us to go. This is God trying to work on these attitudes. This is God trying to make me more fit for his kingdom. And so, you know, when you look at it from that aspect, when you look at it from that viewpoint, then you get a little different view of sometimes of things. And because when we get a different view, we get a view of what God really has in mind, then maybe things aren't as big of a deal as I've made them. Maybe it's not that big of a deal. Chastisement, according to these scriptures, is proof that God loves you. Do you want God to love you? Of course we do. Do you want the other part that comes with it? I'm not trying to be dumb. I'm just helping to understand. This is what scriptures teach. This is what the Bible says. We want the one, but not the other. But we do want it all. We look back and we see how chasing has changed our life. And what's it say? That after that we look and yes, it was good for us. My response to the chasing of the Lord is going to affect how God continues to work with me. It says, verse 7, if ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. Which son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? And I think, to me, it seems like from verse 7 is that chastening is going to come into everyone's life, whether we are a godly person or an ungodly person. If we are a godly person and we endure chastening, he's going to deal with us as with sons. You know, as a son, you have more compassion. You have more you have a heart for them in a way. Maybe you don't sometimes other people. And so I think the truth is we will all get chastised, no matter whether you're a Christian or not. It's just that when we are a son of God, when we are part of his God, and we endure chastening, we realize it's for our good, then God's going to deal with us as with a son, and we're going to feel his love and commitment to us. But you know, one of the reasons we become bitter is because we compare our life with what we perceive is happening in other people's lives, and we believe that God is unfair. That's one of the reasons we become bitter. We think God is unfair. God, you could have kept this from happening. God, you could have made the circumstances different. And yeah, he could have, right? But why does he bring chastisement? It's for our profit. It's to help us and guide us in the right way. May God help us as we look at this and realize that, you know, disappointments in life, whether it's over things like inheritance, whether it's over things like you put it in there. And see, many times, you know, I can easily look at that and say, well, it's such a little thing. Why get worried about it? But then they probably look at my life and say, what are you worried about that for? It's such a little thing. And that's so many ways some things are. Some things are big, but sometimes we make a bigger deal than it is. Number four, this race is run with other runners that need help. In a normal race, only one wins. And, you know, you're out there and you have to make it to the finish line. And Paul says we're supposed to look at this race. It's so run that you may obtain. Run like you're the only one going to get the prize. But in Hebrews, it has said it. So if we have that concept, but in Hebrews it says, as you're running this race, you need to help the other runners. Help the other runners make it to the finish line. Verse 12, wherefore lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it rather be healed. Help other runners. And you see, hearing is part of the answer to this root of bitterness, of helping other people in the race. When it talks about Esau down here in the verses past here, and I think the basic thing of what it was trying to say about Esau, that he was a selfish person. He looked out for himself. He sold something very important just for a little bit of food. He thought only of his immediate needs. He thought of himself. And when we start and we help up the needy, we get our eyes off of our own problems and we help other people. And we have part of the answer to this root of bitterness that it talks about here in this chapter. You know, the chastening of the Lord. Okay, so it's talking about the chastening of the Lord in verse 12. It's talking about lift up the hands which hang down. You see, the chastening of the Lord will sometimes make the shoulders droop. It makes the hands hang. It makes discouragement come. It makes the knees feeble. Maybe fearful to know what to do next because not sure what's going to happen. And maybe just feeling not the strength to go on. And it's saying to the other runners, lift up the hands which hang down. Make straight paths for your feet. It means get the obstacles out of the way so this person who right now is struggling can make it through, can walk without any obstacles. I understand what that verse is saying. Make straight paths. Make it a clear path so that the person that is lame, the person who's been chastised, the person who's going through difficulties is not turned out of the way. The chastening of the Lord. Or these conditions bring people to the point where they will lift up their hands for help. And I thought about the conversation with that man. I thought, well, you know what? Maybe he's actually going to make it because maybe he will yet make it because one of the big things is to admit that I'm not making it. Maybe he will make it. And I know he's trying to get help. So maybe he will make it if he said that. You know, the chastisement of the Lord brings us to the point where we lift out our hands. And I thought about this in, it's kind of a crude illustration, but maybe I'll just give a couple. I talked about this whole thing with the business name, and to you I know that's a small thing. It's just that to me, working through all the paperwork to do that, it's nothing making me mad. I just, you know. Okay, so for me, it would mean sitting down, you try to find out what all you need to do. And, okay, it's not 10 minutes. You're talking half a day sometimes. You're finding out it's easier to start new than it is to change. I found that out. Work through all the paper, try to find everything you need. Finally, I just told this the attorney I was working with said, just do it. You know, I'll go hang doors. You do it. And he kept, it took him a while to work through it. At least I thought it was. And I was really scared what the bill was going to be. And finally got the bill and I was like, wow. I was pleasantly surprised. And so he had everything itemized out. And as I was looking down through here, I'm thinking, okay, so things that would have took me a half a day or a whole day to figure out, I'm still not sure if I'd have had it right. He was done in 15, 20 minutes. And I was like, you know, whatever am I here sweating it out for? But you know, that's kind of the way it is through life. I thought of maybe another illustration that would be better for us. You know, I actually enjoy doing some trim work, okay? I know just enough about trim work to be a little bit dangerous. I enjoy doing baseboard. I can enjoy trimming around windows. I have to take my time, you know, I just have to be. But I tried doing the crown molding around our kitchen cabinets. And if you know anything about trimming, there's a big difference between putting baseboard and there is crown molding, okay? And the problem is they only sent one extra piece along for the crown molding. And so you know what that means for me? One mistake and I'm out. So, of course, you take the first one, you go up. And I know the cut's different, okay? I did crown molding years ago. It's probably in our first house. And I know it wasn't professional, but it worked. And I started making these cuts, and I was like, you know what? It just ain't coming together. So I make any more wrong cuts, and I'm done. So I called Curtis, will you come put this crown molding around? He came and put it around in an hour or whatever it was. It's done. It looks great. The point is simply this. You know, sometimes we get bitter in life sometimes because our nose is to the grindstone all the time. I know what that feeling's like. Maybe you don't. I do. So just every time, you know, and you can just start picking the day. That there's just, you know, you get up, there's quotes to get out before I leave for work. There's doors to hang. You get out of bed at 4 or 4:30. You try to get the quotes out. You're out hanging doors all day. You come home and there's this to do or that to do or there's a meeting at church and away you go. And you know what? You have a wedding yesterday. You got to preach today. And that's just, okay, I have times I can relax. Don't get me wrong. But there is a temptation to bitterness when you're always, you have very few times you can just sit and relax and just wonder what the next thing to do is. But I'm also, as I think about this subject, and we were thinking about here, and there's a valuable place that others can fill in our life if we allow it to happen. There's things like, and I know this was not really like the brotherhood helping me, as in this whole thing with a name change, where just let someone else do it because I might be able to figure it out. But till I got it all done, it would only add to this whole list. And you know what? It just adds to this struggle. And so, one of the things, I remember, this comes from a long list now. I remember Dwayne Whitmer telling me that Jay Martin told him, he said, one thing you have to learn in life, there's just certain things that you'd love to do yourself, but you don't have the time to do it, so you need to just let someone else do it. Pay someone else to do it. And you know, there's some value in that because there's, in a sense in life, there's a lot of things we can do. But because of our limitations, we just need to be willing to let other people do it who have better gifts and let them do it. It will help you sometimes in the struggle of life. And it helps you to realize we can't do everything ourselves, how much we need other people. And that's an important part. Number five, this race requires us to be free of sin. Let's see that from verses 14 and 16. Follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. Looking diligently, lest any man fail the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. And I think, one of the reasons that people slip into bitterness is because they have allowed other sins into their life. Maybe just a sin of pride, the sin of a critical spirit, the sin of omission, the sin of disobedience, the sin of selfishness, like Esau. In many ways, we believe these sins don't immediately take us out, or it doesn't immediately just take away our salvation. But you see, every sin adds weight. It's just like adding a tool you don't need in the bag, and after a while it drags you down, and then it becomes another sin, the root of bitterness. Sins will drag us down. This race requires us to be free from sin. If we're going to be victorious over this sin of bitterness, we need to deal with the little issues in life. The little things of pride that come into our life. The little things of, the Lord speaks to us about a critical spirit. The Lord speaks to us about selfishness. And you get down the list of things that the Bible calls sin, and they will drag us down. And finally, when we hit these spots in life that, you know, we didn't expect, it takes us out a whole lot faster. Number six, this race is run looking unto Jesus. Now, I skipped that back in the first few verses because I thought it was the most important point, and maybe it should be left till last. But here's, to me, this is the real answer. It's what we need to do with all of the things we face in life. But you know, some of the things I mentioned today, in many ways, are just surface things that are not that important. But you know, God brings sometimes life-changing circumstances into our life that makes a real struggle. It really does. Sometimes he chooses to give people no children. Sometimes he chooses to take loved ones away. Sometimes he chooses to, you put it in there and slice the pie how you want. It's a difficult situation. It's something that takes some serious prayer. It's something that takes more than just, you know, God help me today and away you go. God brings life-changing situations sometimes into our life. But this race is run. It says, after the patience, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds. Consider him. When we think we are treated unjustly, look to Jesus. One of the things that I think this scripture is saying, when it says ye have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin, I think one of the things it is saying is that when we're looking at Jesus, Jesus gave his life. And the fact that we're still here reading this chapter, we're still in life, okay? We haven't went as far as Jesus did, okay? Let's just mark that down. When we are accused of something we didn't do, look to Jesus. You look at all the accusations that Jesus faced. When we think life is unfair, look to Jesus. When we feel like our nose is to the grindstone all the time, look to Jesus. You know what? I think about the time when John the Baptist, his cousin, was beheaded. And he told the disciples, you know, let's just take a break. And I imagine that behind those words, there was emotions, there was physical tiredness, there was, I just worn out, you know. So they go to this place to rest, and the people beat him there, or something like that. And there's this crowd of people. And what did he do? He just started ministering to them. He just started speaking to them and meeting their needs. And I want to be careful because I do believe that in our culture, we can create this problem ourselves. We could do something about it on a different level. It's just not necessarily my subject this morning, okay? Sometimes our nose is the grindstone because of responsibility. Some of it's because of our own choice. Some of that, there can be some difference there. But you know, sometimes when we feel like looking around and saying, well, you know, life is unfair. Do you do it as hard as Jesus? Probably not. You know, he was a man that just gave his life for the sake of others. So this morning, I don't know what it is that you're facing. And I trust that even if there are many things that we face in life that we didn't even think about mentioning, but we can connect the dots, right? We can connect what the scripture teaches with what I am facing in life. Look to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. He was the one who made salvation possible, and he is the one we will see face to face someday. Now, the scripture ends with warning. Hebrews chapter 12. It's talking about Jesus here, verse 20. Then verse 25, it talks about Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant. It says, see that ye refuse not him that speaketh. For if they escaped not, who refused him that spake on earth, how much more shall not we escape if we turn away from him that speaketh from heaven, whose voice then shook the earth? But now he hath promised, saying, yet once more I shake not the earth only, but also heaven. And this word, yet once more, signifieth removing of those things that are shaking, as of things that are made, that those things which cannot be shaken may remain. Wherefore we have a kingdom which cannot be moved. Let us have grace, whereby we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear, for our God is a consuming fire. Here he is going back to the giving of the law in Mount Sinai. And he said, the people there, you know the account, his voice shook the earth. People were afraid of the mount. They were afraid of the thunderings and lightnings, the great display of power from God. And he said, see that you refuse not him that speaketh. Because he said, you know, if you don't obey that, and you don't, or if No, it's not how it says it. It says they didn't escape. But it says we also have someone who came down from heaven and spoke. And he says if they didn't escape, how much more will we not escape? If Jesus came down from heaven, he taught, and he taught, and we have the New Testament because of that, that we have to live out today. He says if they didn't escape, how much less would we escape because of what we have today? And it also talks about shaking the earth, and a shaking that is happening, and a shaking that will happen. And I know it's talking about shaking the earth, but isn't there the sense, brothers and sisters, that he's shaking each one of our lives, right? He's shaking us so that the things that need to leave, leave. And the things that need to stay, stay. And you and I both know that when you start shaking things out, the only thing really that can stay is truth and faith and some of those things that belong only between us and God. It says, wherefore we receive in a kingdom which cannot be moved. Let us have grace, whereby we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear, for our God is a consuming fire. And I think one of the reasons he ends that passage on, because he switches subjects completely in verse 13. One of the reasons it ends that way is because, listen, brothers and sisters, when we think about chastisement from God, we think about some of the difficulties that life brings us. He says, I want you to remember that God is a God of judgment. Yes, he is a God of love. He will manifest his love to you, but God is a God of judgment. He will someday bring justice to all the injustices that are happening in the world today. And so, may God help us. Let us not fail the grace of God. Let's not let any root of bitterness springing up trouble us. And verse 28 says, Wherefore we receive in a kingdom which cannot be moved, let us have grace. Let us have grace. And so, may God give you the grace to look to Jesus as you face life and what all God has for us. Let us kneel for prayer.